Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos Nun Zayin. We are in Nun Vav Amud Beis. We are starting right around the middle of the Amud, a little bit above that, about a third of the way down. We're two dots. We're going to be continuing the discussion regarding Ksuva and the base minimum amount of Ksuva. Is there a floor to the Ksuva? So we have been, since the beginning of the Masechta, been presenting that a Besula is entitled to a Ksuva of 200 and a Mana is entitled to a Ksuva of 100. And the Mishnah, which we are still coming off of, the Mishnah in yesterday's daf, 2 days ago, went to discuss whether or not she can cut him a bit of a break. After committing himself to a ksuva of 200, can he now turn around and basically say, can she turn around and say, okay, good, you know what, 200, I'll tell you what, I'll cut you a break, let's cut in half, right? And she's mocha, the remainder of the ksuva. So yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about exactly the precision in terms of how the mechila is done. Can she do it verbally? Does she have to write it down? If she's going to be writing it down, so that means that it's going to translate into a receipt. Yesterday we litigated receipts. Are we pro receipts, anti receipts? Machlokas tanaim as to whether or not we are pro or anti receipts. So Rav Yehuda, generally speaking, is of the position that you do not write receipts. That's a responsibility that we don't want to impose on the borrower. So over here, is Rav Yehuda is going to say that we write a receipt? And the Gemara gave a couple of suggestions in terms of how we navigate the receipt issue. Either the shover is written internally, or maybe the ksuva is a fundamentally different type of document. It's not really a loan document. He's committing to that kind of money, but he never actually received the money. Okay, so there are ways to navigate it. So we are now going to reset the discussion in terms of whether or not you can go below 200. So we are going to pick up where we left off yesterday. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol HaPoches. Again, Nun Vav Amud Beis, about a third of the way down. So the Gemara starts off, Kol HaPoches, Afil B'Tanai. So when Rabbi, when we talk about going below, so it sounds like even if that's verbal. So Amad D'Kasavar Tanai Bato, V'Isla. So it sounds like from the sheet of Rav Meir that that if you try to make a condition, renegotiate the amount, so what's going to happen is that there is no renegotiation. She gets the full 200. And Kevin, the Amar La, Leiflech Elamana, Lo Samchadaita, the Havilei Bilasa Bilas Nus. Because you go back to the wording of the Mishnah, the Mishnah sounds very clearly that according to Rav Meir, she just simply will not be comfortable with anything less than 200. And so therefore, anything less than that is just simply not going to be a ksuva. You try to renegotiate, and even if she agrees to it, but it's still, according to Reb Meir, you cannot renegotiate on something where the Torah is very clear that it has to be a certain amount. So the Gemara says, yeah. So isn't Rav Meir of the position that you can renegotiate on any stipulation of the Torah? So So the Gemara says that means to say that only if it's a din d'oraisa, but not if it's a din d'rabbanan. Meaning, so this is a din d'rabbanan, right? The ksuva is a din d'rabbanan. I gave away the answer, but the Gemara says ksuva Rav Meir ksuva midoraisa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Rav Meir is of the position that ksuva is d'oraisa. So once, basically, now we have Rav Meir settled on the position that when it comes to a Torah-legislated financial law, so there is no room for renegotiation, and I isn't the ksuva d'rabban, the Gemara says, no, that's not Rav Meir's viewpoint. According to Rav Meir, the ksuva is d'oraisa. Since the ksuva is d'oraisa, can't be renegotiated. Okay. So where do we stand right now? So basically, if you take a sum total look of yesterday's daf, which we're still finishing up, so whether or not the ksuva is a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan, it's a machlokas tanayim. And where do I stand in terms of renegotiating financial legislation of the Torah? Can it be renegotiated? So there is also a range of position. Some are of the position that if it's a d'oraisa, it can be renegotiated. If it's a d'rabbanan, it can't. That was yesterday's daf. That's what we saw in the Amud Aleph of yesterday. How do you make sense of that? The Gemara made sense of it. The Gemara says that when it's a din d'oraisa, so the Torah is giving you, and again, we're talking about money now. We're not talking about Isser. So when it comes to money, the Torah is giving you guidelines. Oh, but if you want to renegotiate, you can do so. So but when it's dini d'rabbanan, so the concern, of course, is that if it's a din d'rabbanan, people are not going to look at it with the same kind of seriousness. And so asu chizuk ledivrayim, what the rabbis did is they had to fortify their laws. That's what we saw in yesterday's daf. That's one approach. And then on today's daf, we went in the other direction, meaning that if it's a din d'oraisa, so you can't renegotiate. If it's a din d'rabban, you can. That's the viewpoint of Rav Meir. I, by ksuva, he doesn't allow for any renegotiation. It's very simple, because according to Rav Meir, the ksuva is a din d'oraisa, not a din d'rabbanan. So there are a lot of moving parts to this discussion, meaning where do we put ksuva, what can and cannot be renegotiated from a financial standpoint. Okay, so it's a little bit complicated, just simply because there are a couple of moving parts. Tanya. Okay, we're picking it up now. With the next part of the discussion, we're going to basically line up all the Tanaim and their viewpoint about going below the floor. The floor is, again, 200 for Besula. Are you allowed to go below? So we already know Shitas Rameir, and so there are going to be two other Shitas out there as well, as we're going to see now in the Braisa. Tanya. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Bochus Besula Masayim La'mana Mana, Arei Zebi Laznus. So the Shita Rameir, which is the most structured position, and that is that 200 and that's it. You can't go below 200. In fact, if you somehow get somebody to write a ksuva for less than 200, it's not marriage. The relations that you have with her, bilas nus. Okay. Rav Meir is absolutely working with an absolute floor. Rabbi Yossi Amar Rashai, and Rabbi Yossi says no. In other words, you want to go 200? She agrees to it. That's fine. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer Raza Kosev Le Besula Shtar Shamasayim Vehi Kosev Lo Iskabalti Mimcha Mana Ulamana Mana Vehi Kosev Lo Iskabalti Mimcha Chamishim. And then now, according to the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, so what she could do is she could waive. In other words, you'll write for the face value of 200, and then if she's agreeing to it, so then she could say, okay, I received 100. Again, she didn't actually have to receive 100. She's just basically saying, amochel. Similarly, if she's an amana, 100 can go down to 50 because she waives 50. Okay, so we have now in this brisa three shitas. Rav Meir, Rav Yossi, Rav Yehuda. So the Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda we already saw back in the Mishnah. Here in the brisa, we're being introduced to a third shita, and that's the shita of Rav Yossi. Where according to Rav Yossi, it could be negotiated. Now, right, and even a verbal negotiation. V'savra of Yosi Rashai or Imenu Inosin Ksuvas Yisha Metaltam Nemetikin Olam. So meanwhile, the Gemara says, "I'm bothered by the following." We have the following brisa, and that is that according to Rabbi Yosi, according to the Tanakama, so what could be used to secure the ksuva? Not metaltam, not movables. It has to be property. Why? Because of Tikin Olam. So Tikin Olam simply means that it's not stable enough. In other words, either you're gonna lose a metaltan, or a metaltan go up in value, go down in value, and so it's just simply not stable enough vehicle to be used against to secure the ksuva. The Amar Rav Yossi. Now here comes the part that we have to focus in on. V'chi matikin olam yesh bazu v'alo ein ketsuvim. Pochasin. So Rav Yossi's response to the Tanakama is that, look, as far as metalton are concerned, so it's not a set amount. It fluctuates. It goes up. It depreciates. So now we are hearing the back and forth between the Tanakama and Rav Yossi, and the Gemara now wants better understanding. So Tanakama nami ain osin ka'amar. So the Tanakama and Rav Yossi are arguing. Doesn't sound like they're arguing. In other words, they're having a back and forth, but they're basically both taking the same position. So I love Hachikamar. So Gemara says, okay, so what we need over here is better clarity in the Braisa. So the Gemara gives it. Ba'med var mamorim. This is now, according to the Tanakama, B'shol kiba alav achrayas. Aval kiba alav achrayas osin. So, as far as the Tanakama is concerned, so you can't use metaltan. However, if you basically say, look, I'm going to be setting aside these movable items, right? Let's say jewelry or what precious stones. Whatever it is, I'm going to be using these movable items, and that will be serving as a security against the ksuva. These are going to back the ksuva. And, by the way, in other words, it's not just these, but achrayas, meaning I'll accept upon myself myself personal obligation and recourse, so that if we lose these or these significantly depreciate in value, so then we'll use something else. And also Rav Yosef Lemeimer, ki kabal alav achrayos, amai osin, vahalo, ein ketuvin upo chasin. So the, and Rav Yosef's response is, look, if I use movable items as security against the ksuva, so fine. So you're saying that if we lose them, so I'll replace them. Okay, good. But Rav Yosef says, but that's insufficient. Because let's say you don't lose them. You could still lose value. So Rav Yosef is basically saying that, yes, you can recover for loss, right, but you can't recover for loss of value. Now, let's leave it at that. So anyway, so what comes out now over here is that according to Rav Yosef, you cannot use movables against the ksuva to secure the ksuva. And so now the Gemara is bothered by what is a simple question, but the Gemara is going to have a really simple answer. And that is, well, we'll get to the answer in just a moment, but that is now that according to Rav Yosef, he's extraordinarily sensitive to the fact that the only thing that could secure the ksuva is only going to be property. You can't use movables. And Rav Yosef is concerned about loss of value. Oh, so if that's Rav Yosef's position, so how could it possibly be that according to Rav Yosef, at the beginning of the marriage, he says to her, hey, how about less than 200? She says, fine by me. And according to Rav Yosef, that's fine. And meanwhile, we just learned together that according to Rav Yosef, using movables to secure the ksuva is unacceptable. Why? Because it may depreciate. How did you understand those two? The Gemara says, I'll tell you how you understand those two. It's actually really simple. Sorry, that's the Gemara's articulation of the question. So the Gemara's answer is, they're not the same. So, so the Gemara says it's a really simple solution, and that is that if you are clear with her and she has clear understanding that, hey, I know ksuva is 200, according to Rav Yosef, right? And let's just make that header. According to Rav Yosef, that's a recommendation. But if you say to her, hey, can we make it for 100? And she says, fine. Okay, so what we have over here is agreement. She understands that she's being mochel, half the ksuva. You're right, you're dealing in very clear numbers. On the other hand, if you go ahead and secure the ksuva against movable items, you put aside movable items and you say, this is going to go ahead and secure the ksuva. Okay, but because it's a movable item and the price fluctuates and it goes up and it goes down. So now she doesn't understand that, or she doesn't know, she hasn't fully agreed to those terms because she's not, right, pun intended, she's not appreciating the fact that this is not as solid as you're making it out to be. So there, where she's not clear about what is transpiring, so under those circumstances, Rav Yosef says, I'm not comfortable with that. The only way to properly secure the ksuva is against property, not against movables. Okay, so where are we right now? Three shitas amongst the Tanaim in terms of the floor of the ksuva. According to Rav Meir, it's a hard floor. Can't go below 200. If you try to, even if she agrees to do it, so it's bilas nos. You simply cannot do it. That's Rav Meir. According to Rabbi Yossi, total room for negotiation. Even a Tanai, even a verbal negotiation. If she agrees that we're going to make the ksuva for less than 200, that's fine. So Rav Meir and Rav Yosef are really at extreme viewpoints on this issue. And finally, the sheet of Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda is a little bit more in the middle. Rav Yehuda is of the position that it can be renegotiated, but everything has to be in writing. In other words, he's going to write the face value of 200. She will write that it will be that she accepted already 100, even if she didn't, but it has to be in writing. So Rav Yehuda is a little bit more in line with Rav Yosef, but it can't be a verbal stipulation. It has to be in writing. Those are your three positions regarding the floor of the ksuva. Achde, we follow up with a story. We're on the very bottom of Nun Vav, Amud Aleph. Sorry. Okay. Okay, correction. Sorry, I'm doing two things at the same time. Okay. We are on the very bottom of Nun Vav, Amud Beis. And story time. Achde, the Rami Chama, have an esivah l'Rav Avya. The sister Rami Bar Chama is married to Rav Avya, and Irkas Ksuvasa, and she loses her ksuva. And oh, by the way, this happens, right? Look, Baruch Hashem, we lose everything. So one of the things that gets lost is the ksuva. And now it's a practical question, and that is, now what do you do? Meaning, well, it depends on which position we're going to be taking. Meaning, for the Rav Meir, the ksuva is an absolute requirement for the construction of marriage. All right, you are only husband and wife, and the relations is only a relations within the context of husband and wife, only when there's a ksuva. So over here, you lost the actual physical ksuva. So now what?
When she loses.
After she got married.
After
In other words, sometime during the marriage, she lost it. So Irkas Ksuva Sasal come to Rav Yosef. Amar Lahu Hachem Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Zudiv Rabbi Meir of Achachamim Amrim Masha Adam Esisha Shem Shal Shanim Below Ksuva. So the matter came in front of Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef quotes B'Shem Shmuel. It's okay. Meaning, look, if we subscribe to the sheet of Rav Meir, it's not okay. Because again, according to Rav Meir, you can't have the ksuva going anything less than 200. So over here, in the absence of a ksuva, so Rav Meir wouldn't be happy with that at all. In other words, I say not happy. Meaning, he would view the bia between husband and wife as bia's nus. Okay. He would not be happy. So, but the sheet of the Chachamim is that ksuvas can be negotiated. Now we say the Chachamim over here. Do we mean Rav Yossi? Do we mean Rav Yehuda? I'm unsure, but in other words, there's room for negotiation. So in the case of a ksuva that was lost, it's okay. In other words, it's recoverable. And in the interim period, they can be together. Husband and wife can be together. So you just simply write a replacement ksuva, but there's no need to do it immediately. It's funny. The Gemara says, Masha Adam Asisho Shayim V'Shol Shanim. 2 or 3 years can go by. It's no big deal. Tosus over here says, is it 2 or is it 3? Over here, it's not a hard number. In other words, it's fine. It's totally fine. So Amale Abai Bahamar Rav Nachman Amishmal Reb Meir Bigzerasav. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I'm gonna quote to you from Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman's of the position that we follow like Rav Meir anytime he has a gzera. Okay, Rashi says that he's being machmer on Anisr Veheter, and meaning the rabbis were machmer. So over here it's a gzera. So as such, we should be following the sheet of Rav Meir. So Yachi Zil Kasavla. So he says, okay, so if that's true, so then what you should do is immediately write a replacement ksuva. Okay, and again, this is where you will be contacting your local rav in the event that you or your wife, both of you lost a ksuva, and that is you are going to be writing a replacement ksuva. It sounds like from the Gemara's conclusion, it needs to be done immediately. Okay, and lots of discussions regarding the replacement ksuva. Right, one of the most prominent discussions to be had regarding the replacement ksuva is how you date it from when. Right. In other words, on one hand, it is a replacement ksuva, so it's going to be backdated to the time that you originally got married. On the other hand, it creates a shibud, right, a lien against your properties. And meanwhile, it's being written now, and you can go ahead and you can backdate a lien. Good. A lot of fun discussions regarding the replacement ksuva. We're going to go on in the Gemara. Okay, Adkan, that takes us now to the end of... I'm saying it's subject to a debate. Well, generally speaking, if this is the origination of a note, so then probably not. Right. If not, definitely not. But this is a replacement ksuva, so on a replacement ksuva, there is what to discuss. We are now on Nun Zayin Amud Aleph. We are three lines before the lines get wide. And we're going to go back to the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi debated earlier as to whether or not the renegotiation, they both subscribe to renegotiation, meaning the 200 zuz that's given to a besula is a recommendation, but on the other hand, it can be renegotiated, according to Rabbi Yossi verbally, and according to Rabbi Yehuda in writing. But in other words, but they both allow for renegotiation. What the Gemara now is going to do is that, basically, up until what point in time can it be renegotiated? Now, the truth of the matter is that the Gemara over here is going to be complicated only because it's going to be layered machloksim. But so that we do not lose the forest amongst all these trees, there are going to be a lot of trees out there, and layers of trees as well, it's just one simple question. They both are of the position that it can be renegotiated. It's just a question now up until what point in time. Meaning, let's make it nice and simple. Meaning, you wrote up the ksuva, you had the chuppah, The husband and wife were intimate with one another. At that point in time, they're locked in. Whatever the agreed ksuva amount was, they're locked into that amount. For her to now, after those points in times, to simply say, you know what, yeah, I'm okay with renegotiating the ksuva, it's simply too late. Meaning, we are locked in for that committed amount. So it comes a point in time where you no longer can renegotiate. When is that point in time? It's really that simple. That's it. And where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi going to agree, and where are they going to disagree in terms of when exactly becomes the end point of negotiation? That's the entire discussion of the Gemara upcoming. But as I said, it's going to be a little bit complicated. Now, I'll just give you the structure, by the way, because it's good to see it just in terms of a organizational chart. We're going to have, we have the Machlokas Tanaim, that is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Again, Rabbi Yossi is of the position that it can be renegotiated verbally. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it can only be renegotiated in writing. That is the Machlokas Tanaim. We're going to be introduced to a Machlokas Amoraim, earlier generation, Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan. And on top of that, we're then going to be given two presentations of how Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan are arguing, and that is the later Amoraim of Ravin and Rabbi Abahu. Okay? So that's three layers. That's what makes this next piece a little bit complicated. I'm not going to dwell on this too much, as the truth of the matter is that it's just a question of figuring out the puzzle. But we are continuing in the Gemara. So Kiyasa Rav Dimi Amar Rabbi Shimon Ben Pazi Amar Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi Mishum Bar Kapara Machlokes. So the Gemara quotes over here B'shem Rav Dimi. Remember, Rav Dimi comes in back and forth between the yeshivas of Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, and where we find him most of the time achieving is that he's moving to but he's shuttling to Bavel, and he's teaching the yeshiva in Bavel what they're learning in the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. So generally speaking, this is, happens all the time throughout the Gemara. So Ravin is sharing with the B'nai Bavel what is happening in the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. And usually who Ravin is quoting is Rabbi Yochanan. That's usually who he quotes. Over here, we start off with him quoting Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapar Machlokes B'tchila. The debate is only B'tchila, the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, whether renegotiation can be done verbally or it must be in writing. However, but when you get to the end, that's it. She can't be mochel anymore. So those are vague terms. Beginning, end. Okay. And Rav Yochanan, Amar Ben Bezu, Ben Bezu Machlokes. And according to Rav Yochanan, they're debating. Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda are debating. They're always debating. Okay. So the way Ravin presents it to us is vague. According to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, there's a difference between beginning and end. We don't know what that means. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, they're always debating. It's a vague way to present it. Am Rabbi Abahu l'didi mefar shleimine de Rabbi Yochanan de anav Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi lo pagina na adade. Now, Rabbi Abahu says, okay, here's my tradition. My tradition is that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yochanan are not arguing with one another. My betchila de kam Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi used the term betchila, which again is a vague term. So what he meant is tchilas chuppah. Ah, he meant the beginning of chuppah. Again, the chronology of marriage, we're talking about the second stage of marriage, is that they go to the chuppah together. We'll call it the wedding ceremony. Again, do we know with precision what exactly the chuppah is? No, we don't know. But in other words, it ranges anywhere from being under the chuppah together, going to the yichud room, or the badekin, whatever. We'll just simply call it the wedding ceremony. It's a nice, easy way to describe it. So, we're talking about when to get to Tchilas Chuppah, and myself, Sof Bia. And when we say Sof, he meant Sof Bia. Now, obviously, after the Chuppah, so then husband and wife are together for the first time. And so, what we mean by Sof is that we're talking about Sof Bia. So, by Tchilas Chuppah, so there is no, there's no debate. And by Sof Bia, there's also no debate. And when I say that there is a debate, I'm talking about in the middle ground. In other words, after the chuppah, but before the bia. Okay. So basically what we have now is that according to Rabbi Abahu, we have it lined up so that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan are really saying the same thing. And he also, Ravin, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapar Machlokes l'Besof Avav B'Tchilas Divrei Kol Mocheles. And then when Ravin came in from Eretz Yisrael and he first presented Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he said that the debate is l'Besof Avav B'Tchilas Divrei Kol Mocheles. Rav Yochanan Amar Ben Bezu Ben Bezu Machlokes. And what we're hearing from Ravin is just simply the vague terms, but the truth of the matter is that they really, meaning they, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, are really agreeing. They're just talking about different points in time. So basically what we have are three different time zones, if you will. One is at the before the chuppah. One is after that's the earliest time. The latest time is after the bia. And then there's that middle period of after the chuppah, but before the bia. Okay. And Am Rabbi Abba didim mafarsh leminei Rav Yochanan dan Rav Yeshua malevi lo pagina adade. Now Rabbi Abba also takes a similar course of action in that his tradition also has it that Rabbi Yeshua malevi and Rav Yochanan are not arguing with one another. And my lebesof dam Rav Yeshua malevi sof chupa. Now when Rabbi Yeshua malevi says sof, he meant sof chupa. Okay, so where Rabbi Abba disagrees with is what exactly, which time periods are we talking about? But he also is of the position that they're not agreeing with one another. Okay, so basically what we have now is Ravin's understanding of the Machlokas, Rabbi Abba's understanding of the Machlokas, but according to both of them, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan are not arguing. It's just a question of which time period they're describing. Good. So that is, again, machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi in terms of what is the cutoff period of negotiation. Again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it can only be renegotiated in writing. According to Rabbi Yossi, it can be verbally renegotiated. And what is going to be the cutoff of that renegotiation? And then we have a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, but both according to Rabbi Abba and according to Ravin, they're not debating, meaning Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan. It's just a question of which time period they're describing. Okay, and what I just said is all good. It's just a mouthful. And then, correct. Right, and then Reb Chaim says it really well. And then what comes out now is that the only people that are really debating now are going to be the last layer of Amoraim, Rav Dimi and Ravin, in terms of what exactly is the correct time frame of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua Malevi. Amra papi ilav damar Rabbi Abahu, lididim mefarsh leminei Rabbi Yochanan dan Rabbi Yeshua Malevi lo pagina adade. Rav Papa says, I'd like to interject, and that is that if I can, what I would do is I would take Rabbi Abahu and presumably also Ravin as well, I would take them out of the equation, and here's what I would just simply say. Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan are arguing. Hava amina Rav Yochanan and Yeshua ben Levi pligi. Rav Dima v'Ravin lo pligi. My sof dekama Ravin, sof chuppah. U'my tchila dekama Rav Dima, tchilas bia. My kamashmalan, kamashmalan, de pligi tre amarai, atama de nafsheva lo pligi tre amarai, aliba de charamora. And Rav Papa is basically saying that the way that I would present it is that Rav Yochanan and Rav Yeshua ben Levi are in fact arguing. And Ravin and Rav Dimi are not arguing. Why? So it's very interesting. So and there's a really long Rashi over here, and I highly recommend reading it. The basic idea is that, look, we certainly have a debate going on over here, but the way it was originally presented, so according to Ravin and according to Rabbi Abahu, the way it was originally presented, so we are just simply crossing in terms of what they said, meaning I have one version of what Rav Yeshua ben Levi said. I had another version of what Rav Yeshua ben Levi said. That's one way to present it. What Rav Papa is saying is I'm going to give you a better way to present it, and that is Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan arguing. Meaning, and to have an argument in Svara is a much better presentation than to have an argument in terms of what they actually said. And in general, by the way, in terms of learning, this is just a generally critical idea, and that is that The machlokas of Svara is always a preferred approach than to have a machlokas in, well, I heard him say this versus, well, I heard him say this. And generally speaking, if there's a choice between the two, meaning there are times, by the way, where there's broken telephone, clearly. Meaning sometimes it's an unavoidable conclusion in the Gemara that there was just simply broken telephone, right? In other words, in the Gemara, we're going to find on occasion, the Gemara says, I heard Rav Yochanan say this, and then another Amora said, no, I heard him say this. And oh, by the way, it could also very well be that at one point in time, Rav Yochanan just simply changed his mind. That could be. But there certainly are cases of broken telephone. But what Rav Papa is saying is that if that's an avoidable approach, you should avoid it. And rather than saying broken telephone, what we should say is that they're debating and they're arguing on Svara, meaning he sees it one way and he sees it a different way. Okay.
Actuality, the Husn and Kala don't even think about anything.
Correct. This is a discussion amongst the Rabbanim in terms of or the parents for that matter. Okay, Mishnah. Okay, we are on Nzayin Amud Aleph. We are starting now with the next Mishnah, and Noslan Basul Shnei Masar Chodesh Mishatava Habal. Lefarnes es atzma. So how much time period is going to lapse between Erusin and Nisuin? Now, it's funny, by the way, this Mishnah could have easily opened up our Masechta. Meaning, what we're learning right now is that after Erusin, so then we're going to go to the second stage of marriage. But what time is there going to be between Erusin and Nisuin? As far as the Torah is concerned, Torah doesn't say anything about this. Meaning, the Torah just simply describes, and again, this understanding of a construct of marriage being two steps, two stages. First stage is Erusin, second stage is Nisuin. The truth of the matter is that you read through Chumash, you also don't get perfect clarity on this point, right? The Torah describes marriage, but with the idea that there are two steps to marriage, it's not perfectly clear. In fact, I was just going over this with somebody, the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Ishos. So the Rambam writes that before Matan Torah, so what was marriage? Marriage was a man saw a woman, he was interested in her, he took her into his home. Okay, Mazel Tov, their husband and wife. Okay, that's before the Torah was given. Once the Torah was given, there's now another step instituted into the marriage, and that is the acquisition. That's the kinyan, right? That's Masechta Kiddushin. First, you acquire, right? How do you acquire? Kesef Sharubia, first Mishnah Kiddushin. And then after kinyan, now you bring her into your home, and now you're husband and wife. Good. That's the way the Rambam presents it, that kinyan is the new feature, the new facet that's added into the marriage. And now with that stated, so now we now know, I know we've been saying this since the beginning of the Masechta, but now we know that marriage is a composite of two steps. Step one, kinyan. Step two, you bring her into your home. Okay, so how much time is lapsing between step one and step two? So the Torah never says, and until this point in time in the Masechta, the Mishnah has never said, but now the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says a year. Now we were supposed to know this Mishnah when we started the Masechta. Right? Remember? Going all the way back to the beginning of Masechta, so the day one of Ksuva. So what did we learn together? Abasul is going to get married on Wednesday. Right? Wednesday because it's the day before Beis Din. Beis Din convenes on Monday and Thursday. Just in case that this marriage starts off on the wrong foot, so we're ready to go and take legal action. Okay. An oversimplification of the beginning of the Masechta, but that's the that's what we learned on day one. The Gemara's first discussion that it has in on day one of the Masechta is what's the novelty of the Mishnah they get married on Wednesday aside from the basic idea of getting ready for litigation? So we learned at the beginning of the Masechta because if a year comes and goes, which is the accepted time lapse between Erusin and Nisuin, a year comes and goes and they don't get married, but for a good reason, i.e. the rabbis told us not to get married until Wednesday. Okay, so then we push it off for a couple more days, and he's not financially on the hook. That takes us all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta. This idea that there's a year gap between Erusin and Nisuin, by the way, if I'm confusing you because the first stage of marriage goes by two words. Either you can call it Erusin or you can call it Kiddushin. Okay, so either one of those terms is fine, and I know I jump back and forth between the two terms. Okay, so but anyway, so they say the idea that there's a year gap, that's our Mishnah over here that says that there's a year gap. Now, does it have to be a year gap? So you already know what I'm going to say on this. No, it doesn't have to be a year gap. In fact, Bizmanenu, and going back for many years, I don't know when we made the jump. I don't know when we made this transition. But nowadays, how long a gap is there between Erusin and Nisuin? Approximately 15 minutes. All right, maybe even less. Now, I know, by the way, that's a major jump to go from what was traditionally a year to now we're doing it all under the same chuppah. First they do Kiddushin and then they go right to Nisuin. Okay. Anyway, the question is actually very simple. I'm not sure by the end of today's daf we're going to get like good answers, but the question is actually really simple. Why year? Now I know what the Gemara is going to do. We're going to see it together. And the Gemara is going to darshan psukim. It only begs the question, why year? Okay, so but at least in the Mishnah,
they were younger.
Huh?
They're girls.
Okay, fine. So truth of the matter is that you're touching on what the Gemara is going to be discussing, meaning it is a function of age. That part's true. But the Mishnah, let's start with the Mishnah. So no son basul shem asar chodesh mishatava. I'm starting the Mishnah again. Mishatava habal lefarnes es atzma. So the as far as the basul is concerned, so she's given a year from the point of proposition. and she is going to be preparing herself. He's going to be preparing herself. Preparing himself. Now, this idea of preparation, what are we talking about? If you look at Rashi, Rashi writes over here, Nosan lebesula, Zman l'chnisis al chuppah miyom shetava habal, la'achra shekidisha lahazira al iske chuppah, ulahachshin tachshiteha. Okay. So it takes a year for her to, it sounds like from Rashi, a simple pshan Rashi, is that physically prepare herself for the chasna. And Lefarnis says, that's mo. And as far as the husband is concerned, Rashi writes, sar chesud of a chuppah, to get ready for the meal and for the chuppah. Okay. It takes a year for the two of them to quote unquote, get their act together. Ula amana shoshim yom. Now, if you're marrying a widow, so it doesn't need a year, it only needs a month. He gives man velo nisu. Now, let's say a year comes and goes, and for whatever reason, the marriage didn't occur. Now, again, day one of the Masechta, I use the term for whatever reason. That's an overstatement. It's not for whatever reason. But in other words, if, let's say, there was just simply negligence on either side, so now, he gives man velo nisu, ochlos mishalova, ochlos b'truma. So now, he is financially responsible for her, and if he's a Kohen, she can now eat truma. Okay. In tomorrow's daf, we're going to be discussing this in detail, but just as a quick heads up for tomorrow's daf. A woman marries a Kohen. She can eat truma. When can she eat truma? Minat Torah? Kiddushin. He's Mekadisher? She can eat truma. That's Minat Torah. What the Chachamim said is that, no. In other words, not the point of Kiddushin, but only at the point of Nisuin. In tomorrow's daf, we're going to learn why. Why did they do that? We're going to have a couple of reasons. We're going to have nafkaminas. It's going to be one of those classic gemaras. But for our purposes right now, all we need to know is that at the point of kedushin, she can't eat truma yet. Obviously, the Mishnah is subscribing to the gzera derabanan. She can't eat truma yet. But when you get to nisuin, she can't eat truma. What the Mishnah is teaching us is the following: is that let's say the accepted gap time between erusin and nisuin is a year. A year is come and gone. For whatever reason, he hasn't gotten his act together. He had a year to do so. Okay, that's, you know, it's human nature. He didn't get his act together. And now we are post-year. So at that point in time now, so he has to financially support her. And if he's a Kohen, she now can eat truma. Basically, the Chachamim waive their gzera because a year is come and gone. Correct. Absolutely correct. So Rabbi Tarfon Amar Nosan La called truma. Now, in terms of him giving her truma, so can it be the totality of her diet, or can it just simply be part of her diet? What's the issue? Actually, the issue is really simple. Truma can only be eaten by people who are in a state of tahara. Okay? For a good part of her life, a portion of every month, she's not going to be in a state of tahara. She'll be an Ida. An Ida simply cannot eat truma. She's Tamea. She's an Avatoma. She can't eat truma. So now, if her husband, who's a Kohen, is only giving her truma as her diet, and understandably, by the way, because how much did it cost the husband? The truma cost him nothing. He got it for free. So now he's going to give her the truma. So on one hand, great. On the other hand, for at least a week every month, she won't be able to eat it. Oh, what is she going to do that week? So Rashi explains that she's going to sell it. How's the market these days for truma? These days. So how's the market for truma? It's not so good. In other words, supply and demand, right? Kohanim can get their truma for free, so how much are they going to pay for it? Not a lot. Okay, so it's going to be a significant inconvenience for her in that she's receiving truma, and for the time that she's Tamea, she can't eat it. She's going to sell it. She's only going to sell it for a really low price. Okay. That's Rabbi Tarfon. The Shita's Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Kiva Amar Mechza Chulin Mechza Truma. Rabbi Kiva, somewhat more practical, certainly easier for her, and that is that his support for her is going to be a blend of Truma and Chulin. Right? The Mishnah says half and half. I'm not sure if the Mishnah means exactly half and half, but basically a blend, so that for the times that she can't eat Truma, she will. And for the times that she can't eat Truma, she has Chulin. Okay, good. Hayavam, the Mishnah goes on. So Yavam in a machla, but truma Yavam is not going to be eating truma. Rashi points out over here, we're talking about a shomeris Yavam, meaning obviously if the Yavam and the Yavam are married, that's called husband and wife. Obviously she'll eat truma. In other words, but during her shomeris Yavam period, So she's not going to be eating truma. Also, she should chadashim b'fnei abal, v'shisha chadashim b'fnei ayavam, v'afilu kulam b'fnei abal, chasu yom echad b'fnei ayavam, o kulam b'fnei ayavam, chasu yom echad b'fnei abal, eino ochelas b'truma. Now, let's say that the gap year was a combination of her husband and her brother-in-law, right? To illustrate, right? The husband did erusin to her. And again, the expectation was a year later he's going to marry her. Rachmana, 6 months later he dies. Okay, now, the brother-in-law is ready to do Yibam, but now he's waiting another 6 months. So between the total of her late husband and now her brother-in-law, so now it's a full year. So does that qualify towards her ability now to eat truma? No, it doesn't qualify. Meaning even though she waited the gap year, but nevertheless, it had to have been with one man, and it's not going to be the collective total of two men. Okay, Zu Mishnah Rishona. Now, this is Mishnah Rishona. When we say this is Mishnah Rishona, what this are we referring to? So back up to a previous point in the Mishnah. In that, if the gap year now has come to an end, and he did not get his act together, and he did not marry her. So now, according to what we learned previously, is now, she can now eat truma. They didn't go through Nisuin. They didn't have the chuppah. Okay, but the year is come and went. She can now eat truma. That's Mishnah Rishona. Zu Mishnah Rishona. Based in Shalacharem Amro, however, a later based in got together, reconsidered, repealed. And Ein Ha'isha Ochas B'Shuma Ashi Tekanis L'Chuppa. And the accepted viewpoint of a later based in was Nisuin. A year has come and gone. And now, what's going on over here? Okay, it's a fair question. But she won't be able to eat truma yet, and she only will be able to eat truma only post-chuppah. Let's do a little bit of Gemara for this morning, and that is, how do I know? Meaning this idea that there's a gap year between Kedushin and Nisuin, where is that coming from? Amar v'chista amar kravi amar achiavi ema teshev anaraitan yamim o'asor. So when Rivka was petitioned to go back with Eliezer, so her family said, right, her mother, her brother, said, we got a great idea. Why don't we wait a little bit? In other words, all this is way too quick. Okay, so why don't we wait a little bit? So, my yamim. Now, in the pasuk itself, so it says, yamim o asur. Well, asur we know is 10. We don't know what 10 is a unit of, but let's assume it's months. Okay, so let's say it's 10 months. Now, the word yamim, it's a funny term. So what is that a reference to? So I know the conclusion is going to be that it's a year. That's the conclusion. But the word itself doesn't really mean a year. So the Gemara says, well, that's just very difficult. Because think about how the negotiation is sounding. So he says, let her stay back 2 days. And Eliezer says, no. Okay, fine. So let her stay back 10 days. Okay. Okay, good. So that's laughable because that's not how negotiation works. In other words, obviously negotiation works where I'm going to start off with hardball and then we're going to get softer from there. Okay, so Elama Yamim Shana. Dechsiv Yamim Teigulaso. So the Gemara says, okay, so Yamim is Shana. So in other words, the first proposition was let her stay back a year. Eliezer says no. Okay, fine. How about 10 months? Okay, that good. Now we're negotiating. So the Gemara says, Vehima Chodesh, Dechsiv Ad Chodesh Yamim. So the Gemara says, okay, but I got another idea, and that is that Yamim maybe is a reference to a month. We do find precedent in the Torah where Yamim is described as a month. So Armi Dami Yamim Stami Yamim Stami Dami Yamim Mi Yamim Shenem Rabem Chodesh. Okay, so the Gemara says, yeah, but that Yamim, that's in Parshas Baaloscha, right? That's the amount of time that the Jews are going to get Slav out in the desert. They're going to get it for a month. But there, the Pasuk says, Ad Chodesh Yamim. Okay, so there, the Torah has the qualifier of Chodesh Yamim. So there it means a month, which means that Yamim by itself is a reference to a year. So Rabbi Zera says that whether it be her, or whether it be her father, so what they could do is that they can prolong. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand how she could prolong, but the father can prolong if she's ready to get married earlier. So why not? So Sever Hashalo Yada Lamacha Mimrida Vinafka Vasya Vinafla Yilavai. So the father can prolong for a very simple explanation. In other words, she's a ketana, right? And she says, no, I'm okay. In other words, I'm totally fine moving from erusin to nisuin. I don't need a gap year. So here, the Gemara says, dad knows best. Now, dad knows best, meaning she doesn't know what she's getting herself into, and he does. And, in other words, it just simply may be too much for her, too quickly. And now, as far as the father's concerned, so he has a right because he's going to end up with the responsibility, right? Rights, responsibilities, they go hand in hand. He knows that at a young age, if she's not given the proper amount of time of preparation, so what's going to happen is it's going to be too quick, it won't work, she'll rebel, and then who's going to have to take care of her? He's going to have to take care of her again. Am Rabbi Abba Bar Levi and Poskin Ala Katana La Asiya Kishi Katana Ava Poskin Ala Katana La Asiya Kishi Gedola. So as far as the stipulations are concerned, so stipulations are not done while she's a katana, but stipulations are done so that when she gets married as a gedola. So pshita ma'ad tema lechush dema ma'aya ma'aya pachta mehashta v'chalsha kamash malan. So the Gemara says I might have been concerned over the fact that she may be weaker. So the Gemara says no. As long as the stipulation is that she's going to get married as a adult, that's fine. Am Rav Huna Bagra Yomechav Niskasha Nosan La Shloshim Yom Kalmana. Okay. So now the Gemara says as follows. So we just learned together that as far as a katana is concerned, so there's a gap year. The Gemara says but if she's a bogeres, so Yomechad V'niskacha. So in other words, and it doesn't matter how long she's been a Bogaris for. She was a Bogaris now for one day. Right? She just turned 12 and a half. Okay, at that point in time, so no sno shoshim yom kalmana. So at that point in time, so how much prep time does she need to get married? She doesn't need the gap year. A month is sufficient. Okay, so like Alan said earlier today, and the Gemara over here is clearly on board with this idea, and that is that this gap year of preparation is really going to be a function of the fact that she's young. And she needs that year of preparation. But when she's older, now again, adult back in the good old days, 12 and a half years of age, that's considered a full-fledged adult. So once you're an adult, so no need to delay. Well, in other words, there's still a month time, but that's all you need.
Also, maybe it's to be able to wait for her to become a
Could be, but yes, we'll see in the Gemara that... The, right, Meisve, Bagra, Hare, Ketvua... So now Bagra is like she's a tvua. So my love, kitvua de besula, lo kitvua de almana. So the Gemara says that the assumption is that it was like a proposition regarding a besula. No, it's like the proposition of almana, meaning that once she's bogeris, so then there is a waiting period, but not the besula waiting period of a year, but rather the almana waiting period of simply a month. Tashma bogeris sheshasa shemasar chodesh. Rabbi Lazar Omer hove chay bala b'mezonaseha yafer. So we have another brisa. The brisa says that a bogeris, once waiting a year, so Rabbi Elazar is of the position that since the husband has to support her, so he also has the responsibility. He therefore also has the rights of being made for neder. He can annul the vows. Ema bogeris v'shishas l'shem asar chodesh. So the Gemara says, okay, now the way the brisa presents it, it sounds like the bogeris is also waiting a year, and again, we are asserting that a bogeris doesn't need to wait a year. She only needs to wait a month, like an almana. So the Gemara says, okay, so the brisa needs a little bit of editing. Good, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to edit the brisa. What the brisa actually means to say is that a bogeris, alternatively, a young girl who is waiting a full year. Rabbi Elazar Amar Ho Bal Chai B'Mezonasa, Yafir. Okay, Tashma, let's do one more round. Hamaris is a besula, Ben Shetava Abal, Ve'ihi Ma'akev, is a Ben Shetava Hi, U'Bal Ma'akev, Nosin Lashnei Masar Chodesh, Mishas Tviya. So once again, a gap year. Avalomishas erusin. So from the time of the original proposition, not from the time of erusin, ubagra hare kitvua. And as far as a bogeris is concerned, it's like proposition. Ketzad, what does that mean? Bagra yamechad v'niskasha nosin la shnei masar chodesh. So she's bogeris one day and niskadisha, and then afterwards she accepts kedushin. So 12 months. Ula Arusa Shloshim Yom. And as far as an Arusa is concerned, so an Arusa is going to be 30 days. Tiyufta de Rav Huna Tiyufta. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine. Over here it comes out that for the Bogeris as well, so the Bogeris also is going to be given a gap year. My Ula Arusa Shloshim Yom. Good. But what did the Braisa mean when it said that for an Arusa 30 days? I'm Rapapa Hachikamar. Vogerisha Avru Allah Shemasar Chodesh Bebagros Veniskacha Nosanla Shoshim Yom Kalmana. So, a Bogeris, 12 months have passed in her Bagros, and then she receives Kedushin. So at that point in time, she'll be treated like an Amana 30 days. Okay, Adkan. Where are we right now in the Gemara? So, just as a quick recap of today, number one, discussion about the floor of the Ksuva. The Ksuva is 200 zuz for a Besula. Can we go lower? Rav Meir says no. Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda both say yes, but in terms of how to renegotiate, Rav Yossi says it can be done verbally. Rav Yehuda says it has to be done in writing. Good. And then the Gemara went over the back and forth regarding the explanation the sheet does. What we seem to have had is a steer within Rav Yossi, because Rav Yossi does not allow movables to be used to secure the ksuva because of its ability to depreciate, a concern of depreciation. And meanwhile, Rav Yossi says, no problem, you can go below 200. The Gemara says, yeah, very simple. Because when you're going below 200 and she understands that, that's fine. If you're using movables to secure the ksuva and she doesn't fully understand the fact that it could depreciate, that's not fine. Good. And then, as we move to Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, so the Gemara then talked about at what point in time can it no longer be renegotiated? Meaning Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi allow for renegotiation, Rav Yossi verbally, Rav Yehuda in writing, and what point in time? And here was a complicated part of today's daf, where we had a machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi, we then had a machlokas Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan, and then what we had is two versions of Rav Yochanan and Rav Yeshua ben Levi, one given by Rav and the other one given by Rabbi Abahu. And then the question is, where was the point of disagreement? Did it occur by Rav and Rabbi Abahu, where they just simply argued on what the earlier Amoraim said? Or alternatively, and this is Rav Papa's viewpoint, is that the argument actually existed between Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan? And a takeaway point from today's daf is that, at least according to Rav Papa, this is a preferred way to say it. Why? We prefer that when there's a debate, they're arguing on a point and not on broken telephone. Meaning we much prefer to say that they're arguing over Svara rather than broken telephone. That's a takeaway point from today's daf. And then finally, the gap year that exists between Erisin and Nisuin. So we learned in the beginning of the Masechta, but today's daf, today's Mishnah talks about the fact that there's a gap year. And it's an expected gap year, meaning that he does not have to financially support her until the year is over. Once the year is over, and for whatever reason, they had a year to get their act together, and they didn't get married, so he now is financially responsible for her. And if he's a Kohen, he feeds her Truma. At least that's the original way that it was presented in Beis Din. Then a later Beis Din came and said, no, Truma is not going to be eaten until actual marriage. Then, what we discussed in the balance of today's daf is this gap year that is given to her. So where does that come from? It comes from Rivka, meaning that was the understanding that a proposition for her to get married and the family saying, let's wait a year. Okay, in that particular case, interesting, by the way, Rav Elazar did not want to wait a year. And he said no. But the fact that they asked for it, meaning that was a common practice, is to wait a year between proposition and the actual marriage. And then the final discussion that we had in today's daf was regarding the Bogeris. How is the Bogeris going to be treated? Is she going to be given this gap year? Or the Bogeris is going to be treated like an Amana? Rav Huna felt that a Bogeris, even on day one of her being a Bogeris, is going to be treated like an Amana. The Gemara quoted Brisa. And ultimately, Rav Huna's position was refuted. The Bogeris also is going to be given a gap year, at least at the beginning of her Bagris.